So we have a leadership conference coming up at the Royal Albert Hall on the 6th and 7th of May. And here are two people we're hoping will be speaking at Leadership Conference 2025. We met for the first time in Cape Town about 3 weeks ago. And I just longing for everyone to hear your stories, because I was so just impressed and moved by what you've done. So I'm not going to say anything more except to get you to tell your stories. So let me start with you, Amanda. You just say a little bit about where you were born, your parents, siblings, and life as a child.
lovely. Nikki, it was an absolute honor to spend the time with you in Cape Town, as well as with Pippa. The conversations we had are still, we're still reflecting on it even today, and you challenged us. We're still trying to sort of, you know, implement some of the things you kind of challenged us to. But a bit about me, I grew up in the further north in Limpopo here in South Africa, raised by a mom who was a single parent in a difficult environment where we grew up, a deep rural area. It's a village called Habegwa, which is in the province of Limpopo. So growing up, we were four of us. I'm a second child, and we will sort of wake up in the morning, you know, go to the river to sort of bath from there. And then we'll walk quite a bit of distance to go to school. And I mean, fast tracking the story. But in those environments, I remember there was a time when to start to study, I'll stack up bricks and then put a box, a crate of cold drinks, if it were, and then had a chair. And that was sort of my setup to study. A long story short, so we finished matric. I was able to get 5 distinctions out of 6 subjects, and that enabled me to get a bursary and then allowed me
And to let me come it. To Bev. Just before we come on to that, let me come to Bev. Bev, say about you. What about you? What about your upbringing?
Yes, I also come from the northern province, which is Limpopo, a different area to Manda. My area is called Gamasemola. I grew up in a family of 7 children, and my mom and my dad, and my sister then had 3 kids. So we were pretty much like a family of 10 children. And my parents, my mom was not working. We were also based in a village setup, very similar to Manda. And growing up, that was actually fun. We weren't aware that, you know, our environment and setup is actually less fortunate. It's only when we grew up and we, you know, looked at it from where we were that you realize I survived on that throughout my childhood. So that is my experience. It was a large family surviving on very little on a daily basis. We made it through that. So when we were in matric, which is the last grade of high school, there was an organization called CareerWise. It would go around schools, and I think it was targeting mostly rural schools where they would be looking for top performing students, especially with science and maths. And they would then put us through a program where they give you a series of tests. And if you come top on those tests, then they would enroll you onto this program. And CareerWise was more of the middleman between the underprivileged learners and corporate companies. And they would connect the two. So I think Manda and I were in the same group. We didn't know each other, completely from different areas, but we went through that same program. And as we were doing matric, we also applied to the University of Cape Town.
And that's where your relationship started at Cape Town University? Or had it started already?
So still not yet. So in Cape Town, we are dedicated students, and we were part of what they call Student Christian Fellowship, At some point, she was women's ministry leader, and I was men's ministry leader.
Wow.
And then, but we didn't date. But post, when we were all working, that's when we reconnected. And as they say, we're almost 11 years in marriage now.
Oh, and you've got children?
We've got three boys.
Three boys.
It's almost 1 year.
I think between you've got 10 degrees. Is that right?
Mostly.
You've done a lot of degrees.
So, and I think what happened to me is I studied chemical engineering, and I studied that because there was a bursary for that. And I think I was very good in chemistry. But to a large extent, when I started working, that wasn't for me. Then I studied, I think, three different postgrads. I went to Wharton, went to Harvard, finished a PhD. I probably have about 9 to 11 post-matric qualifications. I just love studying, and it's just one of those things. Like this year, I'm like, Manda, don't study. So, and then I see a program, I'm going, can I? But yeah.
And you were recruited by Deloitte's and then McKinsey's. I mean, you've worked for some of the top companies in the world.
No, absolutely. I transitioned from chemical engineering to Deloitte to McKinsey to one of the largest telcos in Africa, MTN. And then I ran a short-term insurance company called Dial Direct Insurance. And it was at that point, I remember I attended the Global Leadership Summit in 2019, and Pat Lencioni spoke about the book that he had just launched about motive. And he was kind of saying, hey, if you're leading and you're no longer leading for the right reasons, maybe you may want to sort of consider stop doing that. And for me at the time, because I'd moved companies as well, and I was running the organization largely so that I can stay long enough so my CV doesn't look like I'm job hopping. And that's when I realized, okay, I'm no longer doing this for the right reasons. Then came back, did a silence retreat for about 4 days in one of the retreat centers here. I clearly came out to very clear in my mind that I need to step out and set up an organization with this idea of advancing the pursuit of excellence in leadership through consulting, coaching, and teaching in business school.
And you were awarded the Mail and Guardian Award for Business and Entrepreneurship in 2019.
Yes, and there was that. So this was at the height of my corporate success. And when you're sort of there, you're kind of enjoying the accolades and you wanna stay there. But deep down, I'm going, the passion is in equipping leaders, in this leadership work. So we had a number of these accolades, but I had to sort of leave those aside and sort of pursue what I considered to be my passion and purpose.
And Bev, you started a career as a business analyst at South African Breweries, and then now leading in digital transformation projects at Toyota, and then moving to Nedbank as digital consultant. Is that right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
So I currently work for a bank, and we look after the digital strategy for corporate investment banking. It's an amazing space. I enjoy what I do. We do different projects around how do we align to the digital trends and the market. So that's where I am. But most of my career journey, I was dominantly in information technology projects, system and software implementations. And before I joined Toyota, I worked for a company called Baloworld. I was a senior manager for business analysis. This is where then I was looking after the business analysts. And yeah, then I started, I think I then had an interest in moving slowly from core information technology project software development into digital strategy, and I enrolled for my master's in digital business. And when I completed that, then that is when Nedbank reached out and say, hey, we're looking for consultants in our digital strategy team. And I took on the challenge. That's where I am at now.
I mean, you're amazing. And in addition, Mandy, you do golf, run marathons, ultra road cycling, and I think you get up at what time in the morning do you get up? 4 o'clock in the morning, I've read you get up.
I'm mostly 18 minutes past three that on most days.
18 minutes past three, you get up.
Yeah.
And then tell us your morning routines.
So get up, and then the 12 minutes I come downstairs to set up. And then I have sort of time for prayer, and then getting to the sort of the high decisions, sort of, how do I call this? The things that I really need to make tough decisions on and need to think hard about. So I do that work from about 4 to 5:30. And then either it's gym or running or tennis or any of these many things, cycling, et cetera, et cetera. But to a large extent, wake up in the morning, some prayer time, and then difficult reviews or decisions or things I need to think about, and then I'll do a workout. And then from there, the day resume from there.
And Bev, do you get up at 3:18?
No, I do not. My morning routine involves a very relaxed walk in our estate, maybe between 30 to 45 minutes while I'm listening to worship songs and just enjoying the nature and spending time in prayer. But I also get enjoy, you know, being involved in the kids' morning routine before school drop off. That is what I enjoy doing in my mornings before I then start working.
So now you're running Super Lead is the company, and you're running leadership conference. I think you had 2,000 at your leadership conference last year, expecting 3,000 this year.
Yeah.
At the conference.
Absolutely. So 1 March 2020, that was day one for me setting up the business. So I'm in this sort of like a WeWork environment, excited that I'm going to now finally do leadership work. And 3 weeks later, we hit by COVID. And because I think of the sort of that clarity I got when I stilled myself for 4 days in a silence retreat, that enabled me to continue in the journey. So we started in the beginning of COVID, if it were, built a company. We are now about 14, 15 sort of consultants servicing a number of large organizations in South Africa. And together, in addition to that, we run these leadership summits. The previous one, we had just under 2,000 people. Recently, one of the global energy companies, Sasol, came to partner with us for the next 5 years. They will be sort of be sponsoring the summit. This year, we're targeting about 3,000 people, at least in the venue. And if Nikki was done, allowed, he will be one of the keynote speakers.
I would love to, but we need you to be a keynote speaker at our conference. You've come to the leadership conference before, haven't you?
I did last year, and I was one of the the speakers in those breakout sessions.
Yeah. We need you on the main stage next year. We need you talking to everyone. So tell us, what have you both learned about leadership in the last few? What are the key things that you've learned and that you think are the key things at this moment in history? What are the key things for that? Because this is a leadership conference. Because you've been there, they're leaders in business, in church, in politics. What are the things that span all those different areas, key leadership principles that you've learned and that you teach that you think is important?
So I could go first, and I think sort of the ability to constantly refine the leading of self has a huge impact in how one leads a team or a large organization. For instance, you might be leading a team or an organization, and the motive slightly shifts, and when that happens, everything else falls apart. Maybe there are people are no longer leading from the right sense of purpose, why they're doing that. So I find that when the purpose for leadership starts to be shaky, the rest starts to fall apart. So I wrote a book last year called Lead with Super Clarity. And the four main things there is you want to clarify and refine and be on top of clarity of purpose and intent, and being able to communicate that such that the whole organization and or team are also aligned on what we are trying to do. And then further to that, kind of having these aligned actions and sort of reinforcing mechanisms to constantly be driving to what we are trying to achieve. You know, if you go at a political level in South Africa, we are plagued with corruption, a lot of infrastructure falling apart. Beautiful, beautiful country with amazing potential. But yet, you know, corruption and things that potentially are self, it, you know, starts with a person. If I kind of, you know, have values around ethical leadership and integrity without corruption, and a lot more people benefit from the taxes, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And I want to come back to the South Africa situation, but Bev, say, what are the key leadership lessons you've learned in all these different leadership positions you've been in?
I think for me, integrity and ethical leadership is key. That is one of the lessons that I've learned, to say that as you lead, you need to not get distracted by the noises around. You need to stay the course and focus on that vision that you have. Especially in my space in banking where I'm at, where we're defining digital strategies and looking at how do we bring things like artificial intelligence into our systems. I feel like my responsibility as a South African person who's been through what I've been through in my childhood and being aware of what's happening, it is my responsibility to make sure that I advocate for fairness, you know, fairness in the decisions and the systems that we build, but also watching out for the normal biases that favor a specific group of people versus others. So I feel like as a leader, I need to advocate for the ones that can't speak for themselves, the ones that are not sitting on the table, to make sure that the impact of the decisions we're making in those rooms favors and helps the people that need the help.
Mm. So, I mean, what's amazing is, I was so encouraged coming to South Africa and seeing the hope for South Africa, the new South Africa, seeing, and because let's face it, pre-apartheid, you would not be in the positions that you're in now. And that was a horrific regime. And there was so much talent that was trapped underground under apartheid. But to see the talent that's now emerging. The conversation we had over dinner was around, because I said to you, "What you should be president. And if you were president, you should be president. And Bev, you should be, either of you would make great presidents of South Africa." And we had a chat. Why would you not be president? Why would you two not go into politics and change and see the nation change? Because you raised the issue of corruption, and it needs people like you to come and sort it out.
Yeah, no, 100%. So corruption is one. So I've run SuperLead, and I'm also a director at a leading business school here called Gibbs Business School. So there I'm a director for the Center for Leadership and Dialogue. One of the things that we're doing there, some of the programs we're running, is a conversation on racial healing. And what we're finding through some of the research that's been done is that I think we sort of, post-apartheid, we came and say, hey, there's a reconciliation, but it didn't go deep enough. And there's just this sort of suspicions around different races in the country. And we're doing quite a bit there around racial healing. So that will be, corruption is one to fix. And two, this idea of reconciliation, which I think was reinforced through our conversation at dinner. So when I came back, we literally re-picked up that conversation on social healing, racial healing, which is something that sort of says the people that can lead this country they belong to all the races. But at the moment, one of the programs we're doing, we got one of the political leaders, commentators. He says South Africa, for the last 100 odd years, has been sort of this nation, has adopted this nationalist approach to political leadership. He had an Afrikaner nationalist that sort of had the apartheid. Then after 1994, you had sort of this African nationalist approach to leading the country. And now we need a post-nationalist approach to sort of leading the country. And that will also involve cohesion amongst races, amongst gender, different genders, amongst all diverse people.
Yeah, I mean, that is such a brilliant vision. But and I think you said it will take more than one election cycle to bring that about.
No, I and you know, it's hard to forecast what will happen politically. My sense from where we're sitting is that probably one or two election cycles out. And one of the other things we're doing now is in our center, we're bringing all the political parties, the main ones, the DA, the ANC, the EFF, and them. They're coming to our business school, and we are robustly debating their manifestos and the policies that they are putting in front of people. And previously, these parties, you know, they'll just go broadcast their manifesto in large stadiums. Now we're sort of wanting to bring them, you know, put their feet to the fire and have business people ask them the tough questions about where they're leading the country. So quite a bit of dialogue in this election cycle, potentially in the next one, and build towards a more socially cohesive South Africa. And that's where I think we'll be firing on all cylinders, and we'll be back to parity with the pound one day.
It sounds, I mean, from what you were saying over our conversation over dinner, it sounds like saying that the vision that they have and the strategy is fine. It's just the execution that's the issue.
Yes. To a large extent, the policies out there written, and we had what we call the national development plan and how we're going to bring down unemployment. Those are beautifully worded. How we execute, how we lead at a municipal level, how we lead at a regional level, that's where the challenges are, and that's where the money sort of leaks out of the system, if it were.
But how do you? Because I mean, that, you know, you're an amazing couple, but there are, you know, with that, looking at our board now in South Africa, you've got some great people on the board who are emerging, people who've been trapped, who were trapped underground, who are now emerging, and the capability that is there now to change the country and to bring a government that's not corrupt, and that is with a high level of skills that you guys have. How is that? Is there a way that could happen? Can enough of you get together and say, look, we're all going to politics, we're all going and change the system?
So we're reflecting about last year's leadership conference, and how the thing that touched me the most was when you spoke about the Caleb stream, and you brought the Calebs, if it were, and story after story. Peter stream and the Caleb stream. That, I think, to me, absolutely amazing. We need the Peter and the Caleb stream at scale in South Africa, if I was to sort of summarize that. And, you know, people like yourself, you could come back and we can sort of, you know, map out how you're building that in your context. And if we have enough organizations that are enough leaders, enough organizations that are driving that, I think we can change this country. How we practicalize that in different sectors will be something that I guess needs to be worked out over time. But the philosophy of the Caleb and the Peter stream, that's what we need to embrace.
How do you deal with corruption? What's the answer to that? You're obviously, you know, your leadership conference is raising up so many leaders who are obviously outstanding leaders, people of integrity. How do you integrate that into a political system?
Then the hard questions are for you.
Go on, Bev. What do you think? Bev, tell me. Say what you think, Bev.
I think it has to be inside. At the level where it's at, I mean, corruption in South Africa now, it's a clear picture of people that are not, they don't have the heart for the people. They don't have the heart for the development and the infrastructure of South Africa. If it starts inside, definitely you will want to see it to execution. If you win a tender to build a bridge, you will build the bridge and make sure that you don't eat the money because you understand the value that bridge will bring to the community around them. Currently, it looks like there is no heart involved at all. It's more about the greed. What can I do with the money that I got from the government? So I think with the leadership, conversations that we are having, we need to do an introspection of why is the heart not at the right place and, not guiding us correctly. And I think God needs to be the center. With God, then you have empathy. You are doing it. You're loving your neighbor more than you love yourself. And you doing the work not for selfish reasons, but to benefit the greater large people. I mean, the greater people around you, more people around you. So for me, I think currently there's a lot of greed. There is a lot of a lack of empathy, and it's destroying the country. We need leaders who are authentic, but leaders who are connected with God and who realize that the purpose is greater than themselves and their families. It's bigger, it's larger, and they need to serve the masses.
Go on, Amanda.
I wanted to add on a more structural basis, some basics must sort of be in play, enforce some of the rules, policing. We recently had a state capture conversation that went on for too long. Hardly anyone has been prosecuted for that. I think there must be some hard things that we do, and then there's the other softer side of things that needs to happen. So policing more stronger, and also as the middle class starts to grow, more and more people will not longer tolerate sort of this behavior, and also using the instruments that we have, like elections. There's a quote, I might break it, I really like, that if we forget our ability to choose, we learn to be helpless. And I think to a large extent, a friend of mine wanted to start a political party, and he says when he's going to the masses to kind of mobilize people, they've sort of gotten to a place of helplessness, and they've checked out if you do it. So I think there's a social move. There's a need for active citizenship to sort of say, hey, we still have agency. We can get rid of some of the political leaders that are no longer serving us. So those the hard policing, the election process, and the rising of the more ethical leaders. And then maybe the last one is business no longer sitting back and say, you know what, I'm just going to run my business and forget about politics. We need business to be active again in some fashion into the political landscape. And secondly, for business, most of the corruption happens in partnership between politics and business, because the politicians are working together with business, and that largely came out through the state capture reports and the findings. So those will be sort of the four things I might put on the table for now.
And your conference is not just South Africa, is it? You have people from Namibia and what countries do they come to your conference from? What countries would be?
So normally neighboring countries, Botswana, Namibia, Zimbabwe, and many travel from around the country, Swaziland. All Swaziland as well. For now, we are attracting mostly the people who are in the neighboring countries. But the idea is to have an African leadership summit with the top thinkers in our continent who are exemplary leaders to kind of showcase that we can do well in politics, in business, in civil society, in arts and culture, etc. So we sort of bring speakers in those different spaces. Full day of hard-packed conversations and inspirational talks.
I think one of the things that I found exciting about being in South Africa is seeing the potential that Johannesburg, the impact that Johannesburg can have on the rest of Africa, because Johannesburg seems to have moved at a faster pace in terms of integration. It could be a great example for Africa and a great source of leadership, really. What do you feel about the role of Joburg for the rest of Africa? Because that's where your conference is in Johannesburg.
No, absolutely. And the conversation on integration, as you may have also observed, in different parts of the country, the racial integration is at different levels. And I think in Johannesburg, Gauteng, there seems to be we're a lot further down the road by way of racial integration. So with that diversity and somewhat levels of inclusion, I think the potential is unlimited. And this could be a melting pot of talent and also a place where a gateway into the rest of the continent.
Yep. Yeah. Wow. Well, you two are doing an absolutely phenomenal job.
I'm looking forward to seeing more of the Peter and the Khaled stream and all the other speakers and the worship and everything else that the leadership conference brings.
Oh, well, you are amazing.